I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. Footballers on social media and career comebacks are the order of the day. It's Saturday, 20th of January. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Dushan Nahantaraja.
Hello, everybody. It's Saturday. How about that? Saturday. What a day. Jim.
Yep.
Rocking all week with you.
Right, yeah. I don't know those words.
Happy
I don't
days.
Know the words to things, Marcus. You know this.
Bollocks. You can know all the Radiohead B-sides, but you don't know the theme tune of Happy Days. Come on.
Well, it was just such a poor rendition of it. I wasn't even sure it was music.
Actually, yeah. You didn't even buy it.
I
didn't.
I'm not buying, I'm selling.
You didn't really sell it.
Okay, let's pick up the pace then, shall we?
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for getting involved with the mailbag, who sent us messages or tweets or on the Discord or emails. You know, we love you all dearly. Thank you for getting involved. Ryan has the honour of being the person who is provided us. Oh no, we have the honour of Ryan's first question.
We do.
I think that's the case. Now, Ryan has said it's 12 years since Ryan Barbal became the first footballer to be fined for comments made on Twitter, as it was called then. Kids, how far we've come. With that in mind, I've always wanted to ask: do the Ramblers like the way footballers and football exists on social media? Do you think it helps you feel closer to the players and your club? Or is that just a load of old nonsense? Context, Barbal posted a picture of Howard Webb in a Manchester United shirt and got fined 10 grand for it.
That's annoying, isn't it?
If Howard will wear those kits.
Yeah. You've all had tweets that have unexpectedly upset people, but for it to cost you 10 grand, that's got to be a kick in the nuts.
Not for a footballer.
Still.
Mm. Well, anyway, Ryan Barbal, an interesting one. But yes, so footballers on social media, how it exists, how it's now consumed, really. And do you feel closer to the players and your club? Jim?
Well, there's a sort of a bit of an idea going around at the moment now that people are sort of fondly looking back on the early days of social media when players weren't social media trained on top of being media trained, as if it was a sort of the Wild West a little bit, like Wayne Rooney messaging Rio Ferdinand, like Jamal picking up in the morning, Jordan Pickford, which is slightly different because he was younger, but moaning about his, you know, his parents not letting them have Sky in his bedroom, all that stuff, where it's a bit more unvarnished and a bit more just how you know, regular people are on social media. And I do sort of subscribe to that. I think that was a golden era of the unvarnished, genuine thoughts and feelings of people on social media. And it's not just footballers, it's everyone, isn't it? We've essentially created another dimension in which we all exist as well now. Mm-hmm. And people curate that in a way that they once didn't, because we're just a bit more familiar with it. And I think football's just, like it is in most areas now, is really, really sterile on social media. Like, most of the tweets that come from footballers' accounts aren't written by the footballers themselves. It's someone's full-time job, or certainly part of someone's full-time job to do that. And I think, actually, I don't think you really get much of a connection through a player from their social media, unless it's a collective moment that you all join in. Someone's had a big win and they post a very endearing Instagram story or whatever. I guess we have that.
What about the memes of Harry Maguire, was it, in World Cup 2018, where he's leaning on the...
Yeah, so that's nice. Bukayo Saka on the unicorn as well. Uh-huh. You do have these moments, I suppose. But again, I suppose they come up organically, but most of the time it's pretty sterile, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, as is the way of the modern capitalist world, Jim. No, I know what you mean. I think that if you really wanted to tackle that, then you would have to have a rule that footballers must write their own tweets. How you would enforce and police that, I have no idea.
Well, that's your overall goal, isn't it? I plan to be the ruler of this planet.
Matt Letizia writes his own tweets.
He does, yeah. Yeah, that's an argument against it. Mm-hmm. I understand.
Well, maybe that. The rule could be that Matt Letizia has to write everyone's tweets.
and if that's not the rule...
He's going to be the ghostwriter for every footballer. Yeah. I like that.
He'd still manage to find a way of saying that he's been muzzled. But anyway, but Vish, what do you reckon to all this?
Well, I mean, I reckon it's... there's a bit of childish naivety to the way some people... some grown adults still see footballers' Twitter accounts. Mm-hmm. For example, as it is at the moment, having social media accounts is often quite a useful way of making money on the side. A lot of times when you get a sponsorship from someone or even the brand you represent, if you're with Nike or whatever, your social media following is part of your contract in terms of you post this much to this many people on Twitter or Instagram or whatever, and a lot of it is transactional at the moment. Even some of the more sincere and genuine tweeters, let's say someone like Marcus Rashford when he was doing his stuff for child poverty and child hunger and other such causes, because of the scale of what he was doing and the operation that he was. Without getting too much into
the calls
digging out the government, but the scale of what he was trying to do because other people weren't doing it required help, essentially. And he got social media help from people to, put out certain messages at certain times in terms of like, here's your local food bank, or this place is doing this, this place is doing this. When he was like collating, sites for people to donate food and
so it can be used for good on social media.
No, it is. But even then, that was like he needed help and got a manager. And I remember because I bring that up because at the time that was a gotcha, as if like
he didn't write that tweet.
He's not writing his own tweet.
He doesn't care about the kids.
Read the fucking message.
Or I will.
but then also like even the funny thing, there was Alan Saint-Maximin, Michy Batshuayi, like. Players who seem to really fully engage with it and are really funny with it, even they're cultivated to an extent. They do in essence have a ghostwriter who's like feeding them things here and there and funny videos and stuff like that. I think it's I think sometimes it is quite genuine. I think by and large it's not, but then I also think, I mean, maybe this is being a bit too mean-spirited. The thing I can never really square is when it's like a grown man's birthday, and he tweets up, "Oh, I really appreciate a retweet on my birthday." I'm like, why?
Yeah. I also kind of worry for footballers a bit with social media, which perhaps clouds my idea of it, because they are so vulnerable to abuse. There's such a direct route to them. We've seen it happen so many times with so many different players. Horrendous abuse, horrendous racist abuse. Let's be honest, it's an absolute scourge. And it is something that's very, very difficult to police, and that social media companies don't actually seem that interested in policing in the first place. So I don't know if I have a particularly positive idea of social media and football at the moment, especially because, let's be honest, some of the thickest people you ever see in your life are people talking about football on Twitter. And because often they have a picture of a footballer or whatever, they're probably 13 and you don't know that, but they look as if they're a peer or an equal, but they might be saying the most outlandish, ridiculous stuff you've ever heard.
Hmm. I suppose conversely with the social media thing in terms of racist abuse, a lot of the times it's been quite a useful vessel for players to call out that kind of stuff, especially in the mainstream media, and so it's generally injustices as well. So, I mean, I can see that part it plays in it. I think by and large, though, footballers on social media are not particularly... A, good, rewarding, or C, kind of
so the question,
necessary thing.
Yeah, so the question also is how football exists on social media. Let's be honest, we would never have seen that dog run on the pitch and stop a goal in you know, the Argentinian third league. If it
or that for dog that got interviewed after running off the pitch in Brazil.
There's that, or that outrageous volley in, you know...
Did a dog do that as well?
The Thai first division or something
Steve
like
Bruce
that.
Steve Bruce diving off a boat.
Yeah. I mean, that's
so,
sort of,
you know, you got to take the rough with the smooth. Is what you're saying?
I just think that with how football exists on social media was a part of the question. I think that we see a lot of clips, and that can influence how people think of certain players as well. You know, with highlight reels and all that kind of stuff. That's not social media per se; it's more sort of YouTube, but it does come into play. But it does sometimes quite literally highlight some incredible things that you'll have never seen before. Mm. You used to have to watch, you know, Danny Baker's own goals and gaffes, or Nick Hancock's football nightmares.
Yeah.
Or, do you know what I mean? So I think for that, we've shared tons of stuff. And we continue to get all these little nuggets and so on. That, I think, is a marvellous part of the way football is exists, if you like to use the words of Ryan, on social media. I mean, does it help if you... Do you feel closer to the players in your club? I think... I was thinking about this in terms of musicians. If you think about in the 80s and 90s, or more the 90s really for our day, you might see your favourite band or artist interviewed once in a blue moon. Mm. You might even know what their voice sounds like. And then and so whatever they say, you know, that is heavily scrutinised. I don't think the scrutiny goes away, but you hang off their every word, and maybe they might be on a Radio 1, in BBC Radio 1, or whatever it may be. And you would have very, very little, and it would be a bit would be a left of the imagination. So on. I don't know whether that's good or bad, but now you have a lot more access in a sense. And it's the same with footballers. And I think as a young person, I think I would have absolutely loved that.
Yeah.
And actually, do you know what? Even as someone my age, I actually love, I've often talked about the England social media, funnily enough. I love, like the other day I was watching Jack Grealish and Declan Rice playing this silly game at St George's Park, the England training.
Yeah.
And I was just enjoying it.
It's,
do you know
only,
what I mean?
It does.
None of that existed when we were growing
when
up.
When it's curated well and you've got a really good social media manager and they've got a team who know what they're doing, it does give you a sense of connection to those players if it's your club. And obviously that extends to England as well. Mm. And that's sort of what you want, isn't it? I suppose you're right. 20 years ago, I wouldn't know what Jorginho's favourite movie was, but I saw a clip with him talking. I can't remember what it was now, but I've certainly seen a clip of that sort of thing recently. Yeah. And you know, the idea of supporting a football club, which so many people that don't understand football don't get, is that you are sort of you're kind of investing in this institution, mm-hmm. and it's a community that you are a part of, and it doesn't matter who's wearing the shirt. It was there 100 years before you; it will be there 1,000 years after you if we don't ruin the planet, which we definitely will, etc.
Or the league, you don't even have to go there. Big,
but yeah, and I suppose it does help you connect to that by them giving you little slivers of things that they think are interesting. And I don't know, you even though it's really, you know, demonstrably and objectively a little bit silly, you do feel connected to those individuals on the pitch, even though you don't know them personally. You feel like they represent you because you made a decision as a kid that this football team is the best, and they then have to go out and prove you right every single time, which is exhausting after a while, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it does make them at least ostensibly, and it's the sort of perhaps the not the myth, but the appearance of it is that then the people are more affable. That's what people want. Whenever you meet a famous person or someone's met a famous person, what are they like?
Yeah,
it is always the question. And so with regards to what I was saying about musicians and all that kind of thing in you know, back in our day when we were growing up, you were desperate for all these nuggets. Now, on one hand, it made it more special when you got something. But on the other hand, you always wanted more. And you know, but we're now, you know, coming at this as very much as adults. And so I don't sort of get starstruck in the same way that I would have done years ago and, you know, all that kind of thing. But I do like thinking, oh, actually, I feel like I know these chaps a little bit more or something like that. And some of the Fulham media, I you know, like when Tim Ream is turns up and that there's that chart, there's that kid who sees him and cannot believe Tim Ream, one of his heroes, is there, you know, obviously the Fulham player, and just like gets emotional and Ream sort of arm around the shoulder. It's just lovely stuff to see. I think just inevitably with anything, social media in general, you can use it to be a bastard. You can use it for nefarious purposes, but actually also there's a lot of good stuff on there. A lot of good stuff on XP.
Yeah, I think my first answer, I mean, I'd probably like to have it back actually, because I was talking exclusively about Twitter slash X. Whereas, what you know, the point you made about the England team, I think that was a huge part of just the groundswell of love that they got during the Euros in 2021.
Watching them turn up when they get to St George's Park out of the taxis, I'm going, there's 9 minutes left. I've got two children to look after. All right, I'll just watch the next 7 minutes.
Well, those inflatables were a big part of it.
Yeah. And then they brought them back because people wanted the inflatables back. Yeah, that was why they brought them back.
Indeed. So, yeah, I think...
There's also, can we just, while we're on the subject, very quickly before we move on, do you have a favourite England social media thing? Because you reminded me of mine.
As in a particular set piece that the England...
Yeah, or like a moment within a set piece, because you reminded me of mine. When Dominic Calvert-Lewin got his first call up under Gareth Southgate, he walks up to the door, and it just so happens that Southgate's at the door.
Oh, right.
I don't know if Southgate was going to greet him anyway, but he's at the door and he says, you know, welcome. And Calvert-Lewin is wearing a flat cap.
Yeah.
And as he goes to shake Southgate's hand...
Like an old man sort of...
Yeah, he takes the flat cap off and shakes his hand.
That's lovely.
Which I was like, I'm not old enough to find this adorable, but I find it adorable.
That's lovely.
Yeah. And Southgate comments on the cap and Calvert-Lewin says, oh yeah, it's actually my granddad's. Mm-hmm. He's always been a, you know, obviously a big supporter of his, and I think he might have passed away quite recently, but he was like, you know, I just wanted to wear it for granddad.
Yeah.
And that's contained within... a standard meet and greet, you know, comes over, shakes his hand, they have that conversation. You wouldn't have seen it otherwise.
Like
they wouldn't, and also it wouldn't have been a set piece because it's, you know, it's quite a personal thing. Mm-hmm. But just, so many things in that moment, I was like, I fucking love everyone.
unless anybody disagrees, I think it does make you feel closer to the players in the club. Does it actually? I think you're not talking about actuals, you know, it doesn't mean to say you get 20%
You can only
go
on how it makes you feel.
Exactly, you're going on feelings. You don't get 20% off the tickets, you don't get access to all areas, and none of that bollocks, but you get the feeling.
Yeah, you get a sense that you know the personalities to some degree.
To a slightly better degree. And then also...
I mean, Jack's Encyclopedia is taken exactly from that. And then, of course, who can forget Jack Grealish not being able to find England on a map? Or being so certain he wouldn't be able to, he didn't even try. And yet, just seeming so adorable.
Yeah, exactly.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Question two is from Tiago. Jordan Henderson is on his way back to European football, which in some ways is quite a mad comeback for him. Leaving aside the issues surrounding Henderson's move, what's the most surprising comeback or career turnaround a player has ever made in your memory? Now, of course, Henderson is now an Ajax player, which, you know, has been quite the turnaround for him. I'm going to chuck one out there straight away, a man whose documentary we spoke about recently, David Beckham. And this is on a number of different levels, actually. So the comeback, you could say, was winning the nation over again after the sending off and then the performance against Greece. But the, you know, or the comeback to European, that would be more of a turnaround, I suppose, actually. And then the comeback would be coming back to European football after going to America. Now, it would almost be the perfect answer had LA Galaxy said, no, you're not going to go to Milan on a, you know, we're not selling you to Milan, because that would have been, I think, the gold standard, because Beckham said, I'm going to go over to Major League Soccer and I'm going to increase the profile and it's going to change and I'm going to be a big part of that. Well, of course, not long after he went there, he was wanting to come back to Europe. And the documentary didn't quite paint it like that, as you'd expect not. You know, Victoria Beckham said, we just got there, we just settled in. You know, California's like rehab for celebrities, they say. We were thinking, this is just what we need after the madhouse of Madrid and then obviously before. And then David Beckham's like, oh, I think I'm off to Milan again. He's just like, bloody hell. And he goes there and he wanted a permanent transfer. And he didn't get it because Galaxy blocked it. They said, no, we're not having this. And then it's made out that he sat around with Landon Donovan after a little while and they went, no, I need you, David, come on. And okay, I'll one all for one and one for all, forgetting that he got injured and he didn't make the England squad and that was his international career over. That's really why I had to knuckle down, because there was nowhere else to go. So Beckham, you could say, but it was surprising when he came back to Europe and then started putting in performance. But you could also say when he played for PSG against Barcelona in the Champions League knockouts. Now, some people say he had no right to play in that game, whatever you may think. So I think Beckham was kind of multi-layered there with regards to both parts of that question.
Although I suppose David Beckham has been very good at being in charge of his own narrative, hasn't he, sort of latterly?
Yeah.
Certainly post 98, where obviously that became a really important thing for him to be in control of his own image and what people were saying about him, understandably.
Can you imagine if he was in this modern day with social media and so on? I mean, imagine all the attention he got. And so, but perhaps...
I mean, he is. He still gets a lot of attention.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but
they still use him to launch kits that aren't actually very good.
No, I know. Yeah,
weirdly, they look amazing for one slide.
But then you could argue, perhaps, would Beckham have been the megastar he was if we had modern day social media? And we're harking back to the first question here, so apologies, we should concentrate on this one. But if there was so much stuff in you know, because Beckham, again, we didn't know what he sounded like. It was restricted access to him, understandably so. You know, would we?
Because of his voice.
But, you know, anyway, I'm just sort of speculating there. We've moved on. So, gentlemen, the floor is open, as it always is.
Mine is more injury related, which I suppose is going a bit more.
Well, I suppose a surprising comeback.
You could
shoehorn it in there.
Just because of the severity of it. Original Ronaldo.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's the greatest redemption arc in the history of football.
Oh, it's a big shout.
But him scoring in the 2002 final.
Yes, after what happened in 98.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, the only reason I'm hesitant for that is because it's injury related. But in terms of like...
Maybe not a surprise, but
no,
per se.
But in terms of... This is quite short term-y, my next kind of one I have in my head. Carlos Tevez going on strike for Man City. Because of the time that's gone on since. And
baby.
What happened...
Big baby.
Baby. But, you know, going on strike, they sign Aguero, he comes back, he helps them win the league. Just the way that all panned out there was a shift to me. Well, I felt like there was a shift in terms of in previous situations, that's a kind of non-negotiable. You're out of the club kind of thing. You're on your way out. But it was just that I think just the nature of where the game was at the time, not just the Man City, but other clubs, the kind of more and more we were seeing the transactional nature of football.
Yeah.
And it was very much like, well, you're a very good player. We are going to, you know, come back in, help us get this one monkey off our back. And then,
yeah, so are you saying that Tevez across the board has sort of collectively lowered the integrity of the sport?
I think you want me to say that.
How integral was Tevez to that title win? Because again, harking back to Beckham, when Capello calls on him to help them win the league, I think that's perhaps more of a stunning example because it was.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, I'm just speaking. But like, he went on strike. It wasn't like he was, you know, injured or something like that. I mean, that was surprising to a point.
Okay, I'm going to chuck in Sol Campbell. Notts County. Ooh, this is not for me. and then goes on and plays like a couple of handfuls of games for Arsenal after that, and then Newcastle wasn't blisteringly good. But that was a turnaround. Again, admittedly at the end of his career, so it's not as spectacular. But the one that I would say, which was perhaps a little bit more spectacular, because let's face it, when a player leaves European football, you know, and they're from Europe particularly, you kind of think that's them winding down and they're kind of. Especially if they go to, say, MLS, for example, which is a popular one. There's no disrespect to MLS, but you think, okay, like we've seen a number of players do that from here. And we saw Jermaine Defoe do it to Toronto FC. Now, he scored a lot of goals. And I think he thought to himself, maybe I've got a bit more left in the tank here. Because he goes there in 2014. There's a loan spell at Spurs, then comes back to England. And he's one of Sunderland's best players in their modern era, you would say. Like, you know, Sunderland were a Premier League club, you know, and he was scoring fairly regularly for them.
Yeah. I think sometimes players have more in the tank than they realise,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, but it has to go down as, you know, a bit of a surprising comeback because he does that at Sunderland. He goes to Bournemouth where he plays. Okay, does a bit there. Goes up to Rangers. Now, I know that can often prolong a career playing in Scotland if you know, sort of slightly lesser quality than the Premier League. But he wins
it's taking a difficulty level down on FIFA, isn't it?
It is, Jim. he, as far as I'm aware, he wins his only medal in football or major trophy with winning the league there. But not only this, post Toronto, when he comes back and he's in his 30s, he gets called up again for England and scores.
Mm.
So I think Defoe is definitely one who had a very surprising comeback.
Especially given what
and
happened.
Was touted, Jim, just to finish, by former player Dean Saunders on the same radio show that I happened to be on for a move to Manchester United to solve their striking crisis.
There's possibly, maybe the profile of the player negates it a bit, but Zlatan Ibrahimovic coming from MLS as well.
I think it's a great answer.
I think in terms of players making comebacks at their own club... You got to look at Granit Xhaka. Now, I was at the game.
100%.
Were you with me, actually? I was certainly at the Emirates when he told everyone to fuck off.
I wasn't there, no.
And had that quite incredible moment.
He wouldn't have said it if I was there.
No, he wouldn't have. No, it would have been too much in front of St. Marcus. But, it was the most vitriolic thing I've seen there. And Emmanuel Eboué had a really difficult time at the Emirates once as well. Mm. When the crowd turns there was a time where it could get really, really nasty, really, really horrible. And this was a similar thing. And it really felt like there was no way back. Like all of the kind of the loudest, angriest fans were shouting, get him out of the club, et cetera. And it was a flashpoint because he'd been a frustrating player for a long time for lots of different reasons. But the way he turned his game around, obviously Mikel Arteta has a lot of credit for that as well, the way he knuckled down, the strength of personality, the strength of character he has to have been such an integral part in Arsenal's kind of return to better days, which I think is still a fair way to characterise last season, was remarkable, really. In the last home game, he scored a couple. Could have had a hat-trick as well, just screwed one wide. But the fans were chanting, Granit Xhaka, we want you to stay.
Yeah.
And part of that is probably a little bit of embarrassment as well, because you look back at the dark days of your own club and sometimes thought, God, that was a bit rough, that was horrible, everyone was laughing at us, and it's nice to turn that around.
But I think you skirted over it quickly, but I think Ibrahimovic is a great shout. I mean, I think it was surprising that he came back to Europe after MLS. Of course. I mean, you could say it was... I was surprised he came to the Premier League when he did, because obviously there was always that talk about people in England maybe not rating him or whatever. But he came to the Premier League after PSG, which I thought was bold and brave, actually. And then after Galaxy goes to Milan and plays his part in Milan winning the Scudetto for the first time in ages. But at Milan, you know, people might think, oh, well, he was, you know, how did he actually get on in that second spell at Milan? He scored 37 goals in 78 appearances.
Yeah. It's amazing, that's remarkable.
That's decent for any striker, really, for most strikers.
When he came to Manchester United, he was obviously, you know, the name and this, that and the other.
Yeah.
The performances he put on the field, the way he carried himself off it, that sense of responsibility, which obviously was governed for primarily selfish reasons, but selfish within an understanding of like how the game of football works. Like,
yeah.
I want to be a big shot here.
Yeah.
I need everyone else to step up with me.
Yeah.
You know, I cannot do this on my own. Mm-hmm. And people say that when he left the Old Trafford, the Manchester United dressing room, mm-hmm. completely changed. The dynamic completely shifted. And then there was a bit of a vacuum, and it's one that hasn't really been filled since, truth be told.
Yeah. I understand that when he played for them, especially in that second season or whenever it was, people were saying he kind of holds the play up a little bit too much and maybe interrupts the
flow. Yeah, thank God we got over that.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, to give him the fair crack, that it was, he was good for Manchester United, but there were a few little criticisms.
No, I really do think that's overblown.
Have I been hanging out with the wrong crowd again?
I think you have,
That's an interesting point to carry forward a little bit, because people talk about the I am Zlatan element of him, but apparently in the dressing room he's a very, very different character, a sort of big brother character to younger players, which is all players essentially in the period that we're talking about. And
he was really good to Pogba as well. I think that's something that wasn't really talked about at the time, but yeah, I think their dynamic was very helpful for Pogba, who was, you know, starting out, still a young kid, really.
Yeah,
all told. I'm trying to think of like narrative busting players. So like, move away from injury and think about like, was there a player that
proved everyone wrong?
Yeah, but also even from like a characteristic point of view, because I'd be tempted to say, you know, we mentioned him on Friday, so I think Troy Deeney was someone who, not least because of his history, you know, he did time, then emerged as this like accomplished,
yeah,
Premier League footballer. I know that's quite a broad phrase, but I've used it deliberately, and that like it felt like he belonged. It felt like he really understood his game. Some people that kind of stuff comes to quite late, and that's fair enough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think maybe him. I think a lot of times, maybe it's because of the era that he grew up in, or he, you know, played his football in, that I think a lot of the way he was, maybe Deeney was talked about, was quite, you know, some of the language was quite coded, not very well coded, but coded nonetheless. And, you know, we've joked about it, like, you know, saying he was as good a player as Harry Kane, or he could do things that Harry Kane couldn't do. But I think within that there was, you know, some truth to like what he called out as his strengths, because he was, he ended up being to my mind anyway, quite a solid Premier League player.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Yeah, and it seemed unlikely at the time that was going to be the case. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt in this chat of surprising comebacks or career turnarounds, you know. See, that is kind of open to interpretation in some sense, and there's some big players, there's some obvious examples we will have missed there. So do get involved on the Discord or wherever. Just maybe one more for me. Didier Drogba, when he left Chelsea to go to Shanghai Shenhua, I didn't think we would see him again. But then he came back and Galatasaray did all right, then popped up at Chelsea again, and you know, he loved it, didn't he? But yeah, I suppose that's a more kind of softer example, maybe. I mean, a surprising comeback for you, Jim, was maybe seeing Thierry Henry in an Arsenal shirt again.
Oh, that was...
That goal against Leeds United.
Magical. Absolutely magical.
Yeah,
because it was his signature move as well,
yeah,
which not many players even have. So yeah. And he used to torment Leeds as well. They must have been absolutely gutted.
Also, his celebration was far more exuberant than any of his previous celebrations.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, he'd make a note of not smiling, and he was clearly like... That was a great moment. I remember watching that game live because it was an FA Cup game, wasn't it?
That's right.
And he comes on and he just looks older because he's got a beard and, you know, he's just a bit more weathered as he would be. And he takes it, scores, his kind of trademark goal, and has that moment where he clearly believed he could do it, but he couldn't believe that he had done it.
Yeah, yeah. He said that that was the first time he'd played for Arsenal as a fan.
That's nice.
And
nice.
That's what it looked like in the celebration.
Yeah.
Can I say that Thierry Henry never looks weathered, by the way?
No.
Well, no, I mean, compared to how he used to look.
In the context
obviously,
of Thierry
Henry. In the context of Thierry Henry, yeah.
It was a surprising comeback, though. Again,
it was.
You know, open to interpretation a little bit, but he came back to Arsenal. Gentlemen, we're going to finish with this from Paul. Hi, guys. I'm lucky enough to be working in St. George's Park this week, where I'm getting quite substantial behind-the-scenes access to complete the air conditioning maintenance. Top-rate facilities, decorated head-to-toe with the greatest exploit of England's national teams and all located amongst stunning countryside. It made for some pretty inspiring stuff. So I took a dump under Southgate's pillow and hid rotten fish behind Harry Kane's radiator among the Scots!
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.